Hello?
Hello? Hello?
This is the Vancouver Weather State Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your host, Matt Scalina.
And a very happy new year to the VREV community. We are back after 2 weeks hiatus here.
2 weeks hiatus.
The longest we've ever taken off of this podcast.
That is. It's good to be back with the cans on.
I feel very refreshed. I don't know if cans is an industry talk or term.
We've talked about this before, but it is good to have the headset back on
is how I think most people refer to them. But it's good to be back. And who better to start the new year, to ring the new year in, than Brendan Augmanson? He is the chief economist for BCREA. This is obviously the British Columbia Real Estate Association. Brendan does not disappoint. He's not afraid to put his neck out there. And he forecasts the market for 2021. It is exciting.
And stay tuned because this is the logic and reasoning. You know, I feel like he's very good at simplifying things and it's very compelling. And I know you got a rate hold.
I got off this call with Brendan. I had been thinking about buying something, a revenue property. I got off the call with Brendan. I immediately called my broker and I got a rate hold, got him my documents. I'm feeling very similar to how Brendan is feeling about the market.
Yeah, I think
right
we're
now.
Both feeling very bullish about the market for 2021.
Right.
That is for sure. Surprising fact is we've been doing this almost 5 years and Brendan has not been on the show.
I know.
I feel like immediately after I was like, man, this is, if he has the time for us, this is a reoccurring guest.
Yeah, no, we'd love to have
he's,
Brendan
he's soon
back.
To be a past guest fan favorite.
Yeah, exactly. It was a fantastic conversation. So look forward to that. We also have the stats that we're going to jump into in a minute. But before we get to that, Matt, we've talked about the problem with rats in East Vancouver, and I mean tattletales. I mean there's an infestation of rats in East Vancouver. I used to blame the composters and the granola crunchers for their gardens and everything else, but now I think more than ever it's obviously because we live on in a formerly a swamp
that's right.
area.
Yeah, I think that after our peat bog episode, go back if you didn't listen to that one. That was a great episode. There's multiple reasons why there's a rodent issues in East Vancouver.
Sure.
But I think I have one for the ages here.
Well, hang on though, because just before we get to that, here's an interesting stat. East Vancouver
that
has
you made up.
More rats per capita than New York City. If anyone can find the source that I read that, because I remember reading.
Oh, you
that
actually read
that.
It? I thought that was kind of like one of those.
My
like,
memory's
there's
a little
more
foggy.
Suicides at SFU than anywhere else, and you're like, is that actually the case?
Is that might be true though?
Well, I know it's pretty. I was up there yesterday.
If anyone
it's
knows,
dismal.
If anyone knows about those two things that we're saying are true. Feel free to send us articles.
We might even be able to find the Vancouverism book.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I think we're all out of those.
But honestly, if you do know, that's I think there's more rats per capita here than New York City.
Well, that's interesting because I have a story for you. It's the first week back.
Right.
I feel like I was in the holiday was very refreshing in some ways, but it kind of felt like Groundhog Day in a lot of ways, right? You just same thing over and over. You can't really leave your house, and especially with a 9-year-old. But the transition back this week to kind of regular life has it's been a little bit stressful, and the market's very busy immediately off the bat. So it's kind of moving from a standstill to a sprint.
Yeah.
Jump in my car this morning, racing to an appointment downtown.
New car.
Less than 4,000 kilometers. That's how new this car is. Okay. Right. The reason I bought this car was I was thinking, I'm sick of, you know, I don't want issues. This is one thing part of my life I don't want to have to think about. I want a car that is just nice and comfortable, set it, forget it. Immediately smoke starts billowing out of the hood.
Right.
And I'm like, and I'm on the phone as this is happening. So I'm kind of like, trying to continue this call. What's going on? This brand new car. Then a light service light comes on and says, you're running low on coolant, shut off engine immediately.
I've never put coolant in a car of mine, and I've driven cars for, you know, like a decade.
A decade?
I can't remember ever
putting...
I
think you're forgetting how old you are here. A decade? Oh, like a decade. Oh, the car for a decade.
Yeah.
Okay, I thought you were thinking you were like 26.
For a decade. I just got the N off the back of my car. No, I've had lots of cars. Very seldom have I put coolant in. So
right.
At 4 months, this is a bit odd.
Right. No, it's very strange. And also, like, I know if it says you don't have any oil, you shut off the car, right? Because you can ruin the engine. I didn't know you're supposed to shut off the car immediately without coolant. But anyway, I shut off the car. I'm 2 blocks from my house.
Right.
Late for an appointment already. And I call roadside assistance, which was kind of a disaster, but they bring it in. I talk to the dealership. They're very apologetic. It's all covered. Don't worry. We're going to have a rental car for you. It's like, and this is the best. I love having a new car, you know, for these reasons.
Right.
10 minutes later, they call me back. They're like, scratch that. We're not having a rental car for you. And in fact, you're going to have to call ICBC. 3,000 kilometers on this car. You're going to have to call ICBC and make a claim. She texts me a photo. There's a rat's nest in my motor.
Like under the hood.
Like under the hood.
And
apparently what rats do is they nest under your hood and I guess they eat through everything. Like it's like this is an absolute disaster for my car. So anyway, I Ubered to the office.
What happens now? You make a claim and they repair your motor.
Apparently, but it's just I couldn't believe it. Apparently this is quite common. But it's
the rats have already picked your car. Like, I mean, now you're going to get it repaired.
How can I give this back?
Well, I'm worried though when you get it repaired and then you drive and you park it presumably in front of your house, the rats have not left.
No,
like they just
if they're willing to set up shop there, like what does my attic look like?
Well, yeah, that's the better question. Let's talk about the stats before we get to our conversation with Brendan. So first of all, December was just a super busy end of the year. Perhaps not surprising. We had said in November, I don't think we're going to slow down over the holidays. We definitely saw some people check out of the market, but overall, what a busy market. Downtown rebounded substantially. I think that's going to be the big story of 2021 is that downtown is back. 27% sales ratio overall in downtown. Tons of activity. If you look at between $500,000 and $600,000 in downtown right now, it's a 73% sales ratio. That basically means that three out of four homes on the market are selling, and also $600,000 to $700,000, it's a 50% sales ratio. So one out of every two homes selling.
And if you're looking downtown, you know, downtown is always, and we've talked about it a lot last year, you know, the investors kind of left the market. If you're looking for what is a bottom and kind of the move towards positive growth look like again, this is where the investors play.
Right.
The 500 to 700, that's studios and one bedrooms. I would say that December was spurred on by a lot of investors getting back into the market. I would say downtown has turned the corner and we're looking at a busy 2021 there.
Right. And I won't mention the building by name, but a building where a lot of stuff has been sitting recently. Unit came on the market, not super well priced, but I would say kind of market priced. 5 offers. Very surprising result on that one, all things considered. And, you know, so really a lot of activity is coming back. I think a lot of investors are coming back into that market, perhaps not surprising for a lot of people. Detached houses on the west side, a 22% sales ratio, aggressive seller's market right up to $3 million and an active market up to $4.5 million. Lots of people getting into the detached market on the west side. Detached on the east side continues to be an unbelievably hot market.
Yeah, it's been on a run for a while.
Yeah, it's basically a 43% sales ratio. So almost one out of two of every home on the market is selling. Up to 2.5 is red hot in that market. So if you're a seller and you got something under 2.5, you know, good news for you. If you're a buyer, that's going to be a very competitive market to be in. East side condos, up to 1.5 million is an aggressive seller's market. 45% sales ratio for Eastside condos and townhomes, which is really, really active. On the west side, it's a 33% sales ratio, and again, up to $1.5 million. Kits and Fairview are the clear winners. Red hot markets in Kits and Fairview.
Right. You know, I would say a lot of December was kind of more of the same. We had a very busy year and a surprisingly busy year. Compared to, there was 22% more sales over 2019 and
right.
26% more sales over 2018. So 2020 is definitely a bounce back from that kind of minor downturn that we saw starting kind of mid 2018. And I guess the real question is, what's 2021 have in store? And Brendan Augmundson is here to talk more about that. This was before the new year, and we just peppered him with, what happens next? What happens next? What happens next?
Which markets are you excited about? What happens here? What happens there? This is a great, great episode. If you are looking at real estate or if you own property throughout the province, this is one just for in terms of predictions and forecasts, you do not want to miss this episode.
Absolutely. But before we get to that talk with Brendan Augmundson, Adam, we are sponsored this week, as we were last week, by Oakwin Realty.
What a great brokerage.
This is our brokerage, fast growing brokerage here in Vancouver. And there's a reason why. The resources, the culture, the people, great place to be. If you're a new agent, an aspiring agent, or somebody just looking to make a change, a lot of people are making the change to Oakwin, but head over to oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. I think this potentially is going to change.
Right, right.
But right now, it's still oakwin.com/join VRP 2020. You get a huge surprise. I don't think it's a Christmas gift anymore.
Right.
But it's something very special. So you'll want to talk with Michael and Morgan and the gang.
And Matt, finally, before we get to our conversation with Brendan, it is the new year. If you are thinking of selling this year, we have the Sellers Club. And my understanding is that there is a new resource going out this week called So Your House Hasn't Sold Guide.
This
and
is right.
This is penned by you specifically, Matt.
That is right. Penned by me, a labor of love over the holidays. So Your House Hasn't Sold. This is on top of the Sold Plan and all the other excellent resources we have. If you're thinking of selling in 2020, the Sellers Club is definitely for you. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com and sign up.
Yeah,
there.
You just send an email, sellersclub, to info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast. I understand you penned this in Dickens English.
You know, it was right after I finished The Christmas Carol.
It was.
So,
right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of twas your house on the market too long.
Not a creature was stirring.
Yeah, exactly. Anyways, without further ado, Brendan Augmundson, enjoy.
Enjoy.
All right, so we're here with Brendan Augmundson, Chief Economist at the British Columbia Real Estate Association, or BCREA. How are you doing, Brendan?
I'm doing great. Good to be here.
Yeah, thanks so much, Brendan, for taking the time. It's great to have you on the show.
Can you maybe start, Brendan, by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself and, of course, about BCREA as well?
Sure. So I'm the Chief Economist at BCREA. I've been at BCREA since 2010. We have a small economics department of two people, and we publish forecasts and a number of other things, kind of one-off research pieces as well. And that's basically anything to do with the housing market across BC and anything to do with the economy of BC we cover.
And you're an economist by trade?
Yeah. So I went to grad school at Simon Fraser University, graduated in 2006. Did some economic consulting at PricewaterhouseCoopers for a few years, and then joined BCREA in 2010.
Were you always interested in real estate?
I think so. I mean, if you kind of grew up as an economist in that period, so I was in grad school in the aughts, I guess, and then we had the financial crisis 2008. All of that, you know, if you're kind of a macroeconomist at that time, you're going to get pretty interested in housing,
right?
Because that was kind of everything. So that's really was my introduction to real estate and market analysis, was just that really kind of frightening, panic-inducing, sort of, you know, stomach-churning time of the financial crisis, if you guys remember.
Right.
You know, I don't know if you were, were you guys working as realtors at that time?
Yeah, I was coming on just at the tail end of it, like 2010.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess the second half of 2009 would have been a pretty good time since the market rebounded so strong. But yeah, those were pretty formative years for me as an economist, and I've kind of, you know, built on that.
Right. So maybe we'll start as a kind of a launching point here, Brendan. We, for the last decade, every single day I've been asked this question: how's the market?
Yeah, we get that every once in a while, huh? I would say, you know, this year has been so unusual, and I guess unprecedented is the word of the year. You know, going into this year, we thought it was going to be a pretty boring 2020. Like, we were kind of, our outlook from January was looking like, well, things would be pretty normal after kind of a weak 2018, 2019. Hasn't been boring at all. And it's been really unusual in that, you know, it's normal if you told someone we were going to have a historically large contraction in the Canadian economy, if we're going to have double-digit unemployment and a global pandemic, my forecast would not be that we are on pace to have sales, you know, up 20% or whatever they're going to be this year. So
right.
the market's doing shockingly well.
What do you attribute that to?
Yeah, so we wrote in April, we put out a piece sort of sketching out what we thought was going to happen due to the pandemic. And it was a pretty normal-looking forecast, you know, not quite the dire kind of CMHC forecast, but, you know, we're kind of expecting a pretty weak, you know, a drop in sales. And then generally we'd get back to our kind of pre-pandemic baseline in about a year. Like, the way normal things go in a recession is you get a big drop. The second year after a recession usually is really strong sales growth. That's more or less what we were expecting. You know, if you're going to have double-digit unemployment, you tend to get a big demand, a negative demand shock, and then supply starts to really accumulate. That happened in 2008, 2009. That's what all of our models kind of tell you what's going to happen too. Instead, we got a negative supply shock. We were in a pandemic. People don't want to necessarily show their homes and have strangers coming through their house and touching their stuff. And so we had actually listings decline and sales rebounded really sharply. I think that the sales rebound part has about, you know, three explanations. You know, the first kind of, like, what's driving the outsized sales volumes right now is really pent up demand. We didn't have a spring season essentially, and all that demand has been pushed into the summer and the fall. But also the policy response from the Bank of Canada and from the government has been kind of overwhelming, and it was really fast. And they really learned a lot of lessons from the financial crisis. So we got quantitative easing really fast. We got rates going to effective lower bound really fast. Everything sort of overwhelming force thrown at credit markets to make sure we didn't get a repeat of the financial crisis. If you remember back to April, we were actually seeing mortgage rates start to rise at the start of the pandemic before they came down to record lows where they're at now. So those record low interest rates, of course, quantitative easing, all really leading to really strong sales. And then the really, really unique thing of this pandemic, the way it's impacting the labor market. So if we look at job growth by wage tier, higher wage paying jobs, high income jobs are actually up 6% since, you know, compared to pre-pandemic. So compared to February 2020, high wage jobs are up 6%. Other kind of middle wage and lower wage jobs are still down, you know, 8 to 10% or so after being down like 30%. So this recession has hit lower wage jobs, you know, service sector jobs so much harder than everything else. And that's really unusual. We went back and looked at what normally happens, but in those wage tiers and recessions, and, you know, normally you get a pretty uniform impact on jobs. And actually, the service sector doesn't get hit as hard, like for a frontline service sector, because people still go to the coffee shop, they still, you know, go to the grocery store, they're still shopping. And this time, it's just been so different. So a lot of the jobs that tend to support ownership housing haven't really been affected by this recession. So as a result, we've got people who are still employed, haven't had a hit to their income. Now they can get a five-year, you know, fixed rate at 1.6%, 1.8%, and that's really driving demand.
That's really interesting, and I feel like there's a lot to unpack based on that answer. But just going back to kind of the start of the answer, where you know you guys came out with a forecast in April. We've talked a lot about CMHC's forecast on the podcast, and I'm just wondering if you can talk a little bit about how divergent your forecasts were and what you make of that divergence, like how you can come to kind of different forecasts and where they got it wrong.
And presumably looking at similar data.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so it really comes down to a couple of assumptions. We looked at this really closely too. Because obviously, you know, most of those forecast models aren't going to be that different and shouldn't be providing such divergent answers. So, you know, what we had was sort of, you know, a shock to unemployment, you know, causes listings to really accumulate and causes sales to fall, and that's going to impact prices, right? You know, as things go. If you look at their forecast, it gets reported in the media in kind of a weird way where they report it as sort of a peak to trough decline in prices. If you look at the way most things, you know, kind of a year over year, so if you just average, you know, what they thought the price would be, at, you know, on average throughout 2020 compared to 2019, their forecast was actually that prices were going to be flat to actually up 4%. It's just that the peak to trough was like a 9 to 18. If you, you know, cause we had this really kind of high peak, if you remember in this is for the BC price, but you know, same thing goes for Vancouver. We had a really high peak in March, and that's what they were basing it off of. So we had a pretty similar forecast at the start. In that, I think we had prices up year over year in 2020, up about 2%. And they were kind of in that range. Where things really diverge is that they had no recovery until 2022 in their forecast. So things kind of just steadily, prices steadily fell until the end of 21 and then kind of flattened out in 2022 and then started to rise because they really put a lot of stock in things like a deferral cliff that just hasn't really been a factor. And of course, they, you know, like you know, nobody really forecasted that demand would spring back the way it has. But I think on their supply side of their model, they just had, you know, a pretty big shock to supply from the deferral cliff. And that was really going to weigh on prices. And they didn't, I don't think they thought that hard about how a pandemic affects listings. So they didn't really have, like we had a few in our models, we had some scenarios where, well, what if supply actually goes down because, you know, people aren't going to be listing their homes? And that's what happened. And I don't think the CMHC thought that hard about that side of it. So and I think that's why they had prices down so much. So at this point in their forecast, I think they're about $150,000 off where prices actually are for the province.
Right.
You know, which we all make bad forecasts. I've certainly made bad forecasts, but I think theirs was there was a lot of bravado around their forecast, and they still haven't really updated it. And so there was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of stuff with that forecast that I think rubbed people in the industry the wrong way, especially as it was pretty clear that it was wrong. But you know, you can kind of get to where they got with some assumptions, but I just think those assumptions weren't really very well thought out.
How connected is it directly to Evan Saddell's eagle?
I'm not on Twitter because it's a festival. It's a festival of insanity.
Right.
But I don't want to get attacked. It's quiet.
Yeah, and we should edit that.
What one thing that strikes me too is you know, you say that CMHC didn't think too hard about inventory and how a pandemic impacts inventory. I'm asking this because I genuinely don't know, but was there certain assumptions about how the economy would perform? Like one thing that you've mentioned here is, you know, how unique the situation is where, you know, the higher wage jobs are actually doing very well, right? This idea of the K-shaped economy where the service sector is really getting crushed. Does that factor into kind of where they went wrong as well?
Yeah, definitely. That's fair. The, you know, obviously you wouldn't have expected, or maybe, you know, maybe if you really thought about it, you would have anticipated that higher wage jobs weren't going to be as affected. But generally, you know, things don't get that granular. So in general, in these models, you have, like, you know, a shock to just the unemployment rate, not how it's composed. So, yeah, I mean, if you didn't really think about how the labor market was going to react to the pandemic, or those differences in wage tiers, that would affect both, you know, the forecast on the demand and the supply side. Obviously, more higher wage earners losing their jobs means that, you know, they're probably more likely to have to sell their home or in this case default, because, you know, in that scenario, prices were probably falling. You're more likely to default than just list your home, right? There's so many. Obviously, in a pandemic, it's very difficult to forecast, and that's why you can cut them a little slack. I think the issue is really in that they stuck to that forecast and kind of doubled down on it at a time when it was pretty obvious that some of those trends I talked about were already kind of emerging, and things were turning around, and they were really still kind of sticking to their guns. And that's when it's like, well, you know, how much of this is model driven and how much of this is just philosophy?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you find, like, so, you know, one of the things obviously we hope to talk to you about today is 2021 and potentially beyond, and get into the, speaking of granular, kind of different areas and submarkets and property types and things like that. But do you find it more difficult right now to come up with a forecast than, say, a usual year, just based on everything you've kind of outlined here?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at where our forecast started, where they went, and where they are now, we've been kind of chasing the number all year, which is not really where you want to be. It's definitely, like, this year for forecasters has been pretty wild, because you know, not only are we seeing pretty extraordinary swings in things like GDP growth that, you know, have, you know, as a side note, have just ruined our ability to chart things for, like, the next decade. Because if you throw up a graph of GDP and it's got one number that's -40%, one number's +40, and then, like, well, she was 2% growth. It's actually pretty good. It looks like a speck on the chart now. So that's a problem we have to deal with for, like, the next decade. But, you know, we'll see. But yeah, generally, you know, forecasting in a recession is always hard to pinpoint when things are going to turn around. Forecasting a recession with a pandemic on top of it, obviously extraordinarily difficult.
Yeah, no kidding. Maybe kind of shifting gears a bit, can we talk, like, kind of about some of the submarkets or subsegments of the market? Thinking specifically about the resilient segments of the market right now, like, what in your opinion has been one of the more resilient submarkets? And I guess we'll start geographically.
Yeah, I mean, I'll start with product type, because then it really kind of spreads geographically. It's sure. Obviously, in a pandemic, the pandemic's driving a real preference for single detached homes and for space. So we're seeing that all around the province. People really want space, and they're willing to pay a real premium for it. So that's one of the things driving the average price higher too, is that there's just a higher share of more expensive single family homes in the average price. So it's a little skewed, but there's, you know, people, obviously, if they're going to be working from home for an extended period, they're going to want extra space for a home office. You're not going to be able to see your family and friends indoors. You know, it's nice to have an outdoor space that you can do some socially distanced entertaining. So, really, in every market, we're seeing a real drive for space. And that's, you know, if you go to the Okanagan, we're seeing that on the island, especially, and inventories of single detached homes it was already pretty low, because we're not obviously building a ton of that type of home anymore. But and that's really going to shape the next year or two. There's not a lot of that product, and a lot of people want it. And it's one of those, like, how deep is the scar on the psyche of buyers over the next 5 years? I mean, do we have this sort of a behavioral economics thing? You know, are people going to be anticipating another pandemic, and therefore there's that real desire for space is really going to drive kind of sales preferences for a while, or do we kind of get back to normal and things kind of in that space settle down? So that's really, I mean, regardless of geography, that's kind of the big story, is that kind of flight to space and square footage.
Do you think there's a fact, because we used to talk all the time on the program about this tale of two markets, kind of the attached market and the detached market. And it feels like, you know, prior to, well, actually, I should say that the detached market started to feel like it was going on a real run prior to the pandemic. At least things were kind of heating up. And it was also a market where we saw, you know, it was fairly soft. Well, the condo market was performing, right?
Yeah.
How
yeah.
much do you think, you know, this is also a combination of maybe detached, kind of the detached market was set to go on a run just from normal market pressures combined with COVID?
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because the single detached was certainly pretty beaten up since about 2016 or so. And so, yeah, in some ways it was kind of due to get some strength back. And we did have interest rates falling a bit through 2019 after they had been higher in 2018 plus B20. So we had all of these kind of issues and taxes piled on top of that particular sector. So part of it, I think, was it just starting to rebound for sure pre-pandemic, and maybe this just was sort of rocket fuel for a trend that was already emerging. And then on the condo side, you know, in some ways, you know, in the future, especially in Vancouver, like the condo sector is kind of the only game in town for most people from an affordability standpoint, and just like that's all we're really building, because that's all we have space to build in, you know, for considering the amount of people that are going to be located in the Lower Mainland over the next 10 to 20 years. So that sector is really interesting, because there's tons of construction going on in the condo sector. It's really slow to complete. You know, it takes 5 years to get a new apartment to the market, which is too long. So there's that sort of issue where we got a lot of supply coming on board, but it's really uncertain when, and it's really delayed. We had this year the strata insurance issues that were, I think, holding back the market too. Looks like maybe those are starting to get resolved. So yeah, it's interesting, because obviously a lot of the demand is going to from just demographics and from young people aging into their prime home buying years is going to be really directed at condos, but maybe they have kind of a year or two of softness after this.
So in thinking about you know, that year or two of softness, I guess. I just going back to what's really been the driving force in 2020, which is that push for more space and you know, outdoor space and the single family market being really strong. Like the idea of this how deep the scar is an interesting one, and this kind of behavioral economic side of things. What is your take on that? Best guess, doing what you do, is that something that is going to continue through 2021, at least presumably, with the vaccine kind of being months out? But do you think that's kind of a 3 to 5 year kind of factor influencing the market or beyond? Or what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think there's probably two sides to it. You know, one is I think there will be still a push for people to want to own space. I mean, this is a pretty deep wound on the psyche, and I think it's going to push some behavior. But there is kind of a cap on how much it can, simply because there's just not that much supply, and prices are already, you know, pretty stretched to close to peak on a lot of those prices on single detached. So, you know, we'll see how much people are willing to pay a premium for that space. And, you know, rates are going to be low for a long time, so maybe that's a little easier to digest. And then on the condo side, it's the same scar. I mean, do you want to be sharing space in an elevator? Do you want to be downtown? So a lot of the same kind of issues, and it's really difficult to say when they're going to resolve. The issue is, like, demographics are pretty unrelenting, and land constraints are unrelenting. So we have to fit a lot more people, especially as immigration normalizes. We've got to fit a lot more people into a space that isn't zoned very well. And so it's a pretty limited space. Where else are people going to go rather than condos? So I think that eventually the market for that for condos is going to return. We wrote a whole piece about this as well. My colleague Kelly Fong wrote a piece about how COVID-19 is impacting immigration into BC and into Vancouver, and what that means for the condo market. And we think it's a short term issue. Eventually, when immigration returns, Airbnbs return, investors return, I think we're going to have that market's going to kind of get back to normal.
So just thinking about, pain points in the market and immigration and all the rest here, can we kind of delve into what 2021 looks like, by property type and by region?
So I think, I've got sort of, five big points on 2021. And the first one is, and it will kind of tie these into what it means for the market around the province. But first, obviously, is vaccines. We had our first, the first person in the world vaccinated in the UK today. So clearly that's going to have a huge impact on just confidence and just in general, confidence in the market, confidence in the economy as those roll out. I think the U.S. is slated to have something like 150 million people vaccinated in the first quarter. Things go really well. So we're going to get back to normal, I think, a little faster than people are currently expecting. So there's that. There's a rationality returning to the global economy, and especially to global trade, and an end to needless trade wars. Let you fill in the blanks on why that rationality is returning. and so that's the second one. Thirdly, we're going to have, I think, a consumption boom in 2021. There's currently about $75 billion of savings over and above normal sitting in personal deposits at banks. The savings rate of Canadians has exploded during the pandemic because of precautionary savings, spending that's not happening. All that money, I think, is going to be flooding back into the economy next year. Then we have major projects resuming. Those projects added 2% growth to GDP in 2019. So of the 2.7% growth in 2019, nearly 2/3 of that was just from major projects. Those were kind of tooled down this year and are ramping up again. And then we have immigration coming back. So all of those things mean that we're going to have really strong demand and a lot of spending going on in the economy next year, probably an economy growing at 4% plus. And that's really going to mean a strong demand all across the province. We're expecting sales for BC to be probably above 100,000 sales for the first time since 2016. A lot of that, so like the north, I think, is going to be really strong because of all the major project spending happening, all the employment happening. So I'd watch for the north to really bounce back. I think some of what the pandemic has done as well is accelerate retirement plans. So I think we're going to continue to see strong migration to the island and the Okanagan. That's going to drive sales in those spots. And then you have, Vancouver is sort of, obviously the hub of economic activity in BC. And so as the economy is growing at 4 to 5%, throw in extraordinarily low interest rates, I think we're going to have a very strong year all across the Lower Mainland too. You look what's happening in the Fraser Valley right now, kind of as almost like a substitute for Vancouver single detached. I think a lot of you can get slightly more affordable in places in the Fraser Valley, and we're seeing huge sales growth towards the end of this year all across the Fraser Valley too. So, and that's a region that's already growing incredibly because of places like Surrey, just demographic wise. So I think that's kind of the story. I think every part of the province is going to see really strong sales next year, and it's going to be driven by people have a lot of money to spend. A lot of that's going to find its way into down payments. We've got low mortgage rates, record low mortgage rates, probably over for the next year. Maybe a little upward pressure if the Bank of Canada starts easing up on its quantitative easing program, slowing their bond purchases, but. Other than that, there's not a whole lot. There's a lot of tailwind and not a lot of headwinds, I think, for 2021.
Interesting. We had earlier on this year, we had John Barry, New York Times bestseller, on the program talking about the Spanish flu and how, in his opinion, it led to the Roaring Twenties. And we've been talking. There's a feeling of like the Roaring 2020s.
which is feels like we're on the and that really coincides with what we're feeling and what we're thinking as well. Is it just feels like there's a lot of pent up demand right now for sure.
Yeah, and pent up demand almost just to get out and spend money.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I think that's accurate, right? There's a and I feel also like there's and we've talked about this before. It's hard to kind of talk about this in any kind of meaningful way other than the fact that people want to get things done. Like they want to, they haven't been, they, it's like everyone's been collectively handcuffed here and, yeah. and now they want to get back to real life. Right. And real life often involves investing in real estate or buying a home or moving up the ladder or whatever. Right. So that's interesting. So in thinking kind of maybe like you talked about a lot of regions there and maybe it's worth kind of, talking about maybe one of your favorite kind of regions that you're kind of monitoring or where you think there could be potential for really explosive growth over the next
and property
years.
Type.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think over the next, you know, it depends on the next year. I think everything's going to do pretty well and tilted towards single detached and tilted towards, you know, places where there's a lot of population growth, and a lot of economic activity. So it's generally lower mainland. I think long term, I mean, I think Surrey is still, an incredible story because it's going to keep growing and eventually be the same size or larger than the city of Vancouver. And it's a huge place and you can still build a lot there. So I think generally that's going to be a huge story just over the next decade is the growth of Surrey and its sort of continued kind of prominence in the province. Other places, I think same kind of like it's a lot of it is demographic. So the longer out we go, it's all, pretty much everything is shaped by demographics. And there's two main trends. One is millennials aging into their home buying years. And it's a huge, huge cohort. And if you kind of look at demographics, you see this huge wave in the next 5 to 10 years, especially in the lower mainland of young people aging into their prime home buying and the kind of prime earning years as well in terms of their careers. And so where are those people going to go to buy? You know, some of them are, of course, going to be able to get some of that intergenerational wealth transfers. So maybe they can afford more expensive areas. But you know, mostly when we look at that demographic kind of boom in the next 5 to 10 years, most of them are probably going to end up in condos, I would guess. And especially if they're just starting off, they're going to be in more affordable areas. So that's kind of generally, I think, where there's going to be a lot of pressure. Fortunately, I think a lot of supply coming in those places as well. And then the other kind of side on the demographics is retirees. So where are Canadian and where are BC retirees going to go? And that generally means Vancouver Island and the Okanagan, obviously kind of more into other parts of the interior as well. But when we look at Vancouver Island, they're at about 20-year lows for inventory. So we look at their level of listings, which means there's going to be just huge price pressure in that part of the market. So anything, any recreational property, anything on acreage on Vancouver Island, kind of outside of Victoria, I think is going to be facing some really strong upper price pressure. Same thing in the Okanagan to maybe a lesser extent. They have extraordinarily low levels of inventory as well. And then in the north, where I think we're going to have a real economic boom across the north. Outside of places like the kind of hub, like Prince George, I think is where a lot of that activity is going to take place, but it's really going to benefit all of the north. And unfortunately, that's another place that has no supply. So that's kind of the big issue over the next 5 years. We're going to have a lot of demographic pressure from a lot of different angles, and not a lot of supply to meet it, especially in areas outside of the lower mainland that haven't seen the level of construction that say Vancouver has. So I think that if we're looking at where price is going to rise the most, that would be kind of my first shot at an answer is the places where we're just not seeing a lot of supply and they're headed towards some real demographic kind of driven demand challenges.
Anything you wouldn't buy?
And then I wouldn't buy. Oh, I don't know. A mobile home in Fort Nelson.
Oh, I wish I
just removed it. Subjects on one.
That's the type of question. Like, what kind of answer can I give that would get me in trouble somehow?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, maybe something we've been talking a lot about on the show, you know, you've mentioned a lot of areas there. Maybe not so surprising, softer areas of the market has been downtown Vancouver over the last year. What are your thoughts on downtown and what the next 6 to 18 months looks like there?
Yeah, I work downtown, but I haven't spent much time downtown in the past 8 months or so. I understand parts of it aren't looking great these days. I don't know. I mean, obviously, you know, when I talked about millennials and one of my favorite quotes, or ideas over the past couple of years is the idea of advice to young people, to get credentialed and get to a city. So, you know, get a university degree and get to a large city as fast as you can, because that's where the opportunities and that's where the money is. You know, I think that's still important. I think that most young people want to be in a city and want to be, you know, around, you know, restaurants and coffee shops and places they can hang out with their friends, especially if they're living in a small condo. So even if downtown's having some struggles now, I would hope those are going to be short term. I think there's just enough, you know, again, once we get back to normal, I think there's just enough that people want to be in cities and people are going to want to be. Downtown Vancouver is a really cool place and a really incredible, you know, place, especially to spend your youth. And we've going to have all this pressure from millennials needing, you know, forming households for the first time. So I think it'll bounce back, whatever troubles it's having now. I think it's a short term story.
You know, thinking about, and I mean, it's a pretty positive 2021 by the sounds of things here. But for those listeners who, you know, we have a lot of information heavy listeners out there that are really love the data, love, you know, hearing experts like yourself talk about it. What, if you were saying like indicators to watch, in early 2021 into the spring, like what are the key indicators you're looking at in analyzing markets?
Yeah, so things to watch. I think, you know, I'm going to do some self promotion at first. We have what we call our nowcast of the BC economy. So, you know, one of the best ways to track what's going on is close to real time in the economy. Is I think our nowcast indicator, it sort of tells you how the economy is growing by month. You know, GDP data for provinces is only released annually and it takes about a year. So like, we just found out how fast the economy grew in 2019, about a month ago. So we have this kind of a real-time indicator on how the economy is doing, and you can kind of follow that. We should see that it's still in negative territory right now. It's a year-over-year indicator. But we should see that into positive territory next year. And that'll be a pretty good sign that our overall kind of thesis about 2021 being a really strong year is right. So that's one thing we would track. I mean, the other things that we look at, of course, the most important thing for home prices in our analysis and when we're modeling things is the sales to active listings ratio or some month inventory. So that's a, you know, super strongly correlated with price growth. As long as we're seeing listings, you know, still pretty low and pretty high level of demand, then markets are going to be really tight, and that means prices are going to be rising, kind of, you know, inflation plus a few percent. So those are kind of the big ones. I mean, the nowcast is kind of our really in our indicator of how the economy is doing. We also have a reopening dashboard that tracks a whole bunch of indicators. So you can kind of look at the different sectors of the economy and see how things are getting or how things are evolving compared to where they were pre-pandemic. That'll be a pretty good sign too that the economy is normalizing when we start to see some positive trends there. You know, other things are just general things we look at for the economy: job growth, unemployment rates, interest rates. For me, I think overall, the last 10 years, if we look back at Vancouver, especially sales and prices, but especially prices, and just kind of catalog the number of shocks that have hit this market and how resilient it's been. We had a financial crisis. We had several rounds of credit tightening from the CMHC or mortgage kind of regulation tightening, including, you know, B20, which was enormous. We had several different taxes thrown at the market, the foreign buyers tax, the speculation vacancy tax, the empty homes tax, the school tax. And now we have a global pandemic and prices and sales just keep going higher. So this is an extraordinarily resilient market. The one thing that I think has proven to be able to put, you know, any kind of a lasting dent in the market are interest rates. So if we looked at what happened at the start of 2018, when rates looked like they were normalizing, the Bank of Canada was raising rates, the 5-year fixed rate was I think approaching 4% at the time. And then we had B20 on top of that. So you had to qualify at close to 6. That's when we saw markets really, really affected. So for me, as long as we're going to have really low interest rates, we're going to have a really strong housing market. So, I mean, I think that's been the lesson for me of the past decade is not a lot matters to the Vancouver housing market except interest rates.
Yeah, that's a great, great take. We were just talking about that actually before we came on air here. And I think that's it. It's weird. We're, you know, I think more so, and I think this is maybe across the board when you talk about expensive markets around the world, but we're very much a payment market. People calculate their payments to exist and think less maybe about prices in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and that's, you know, with a lot of things. And I just, you know, that's why sort of debt service ratios or carrying cost to kind of income are much better measures of affordability in markets are much more predictive than things like price to income ratios, price to rent that are just don't have a very good predictive track record. I think, you know, generally in markets like Vancouver, to me, when we do our analysis, that interest rate channel is so powerful that's really the one thing that can really, really drive markets up or down.
Right. So it sounds like we should get rid of this Metro Vancouver Housing Collapse Facebook group. Just kidding.
We don't want you to comment
on it.
You know, one thing that I don't think we've touched on, I don't know if you guys have this in your forecasting, but appreciation over 2021 by property type and potentially by areas or even just, you know, the greater Vancouver area. Do you guys have forecasting on that?
Yeah, we do. So twice a year, we publish a big forecast by region and by product type. We just published that in November. So we do each real estate board by single detached apartments and townhouses. It would be amazing if I knew every one of those numbers off the top of my head, but yeah. I don't. I think in general, our thesis is still single detached are going to be a little stronger than apartments.
Fair enough. Last question for you, and then if you have time, we have a kind of a quick, some would say fun segment called the Five Wire. But just as a final question, maybe if you had, you know, the borrowing ability of say $2.5 million, where and what would you buy in BC in 2021?
Yeah, and it's such a personal, not that personal to me, but like I think all of these choices are kind of personal. So like when we bought our house in Pitt Meadows, the things we were looking for at the time were, you know, we had a small family at the time, we had small kids anyway, and we just want, you know, a basement. I wanted a gym. We wanted a yard. I wanted a place for a basketball hoop. So like to get those places at the time in Pitt Meadows, that was a lot easier to swing than anywhere else in Vancouver. But you know, what you're really going to have to, you know, it depends on what you need it for, right? Like if you've got a small family and you want space, then you're probably going to be looking outside the Lower Mainland. Although if you have $2.5 million, your choices are a lot wider. You know, but in general, it kind of depends on what you need. I'm a big kind of proponent of, you know, buy, you know, what you need and not a lot more of what you don't need. So, you know, I would, if it were me, I'd probably buy the house I'm in and not borrow the extra $1 million or so. So, but that's me personally.
And I don't know if you invest in real estate, but as a straight investment, do you have an answer on that front, or is that something you just don't dabble in?
Yeah, I've, you know, as far as portfolio diversification, you know, I own a home and I work in real estate. So I don't then also invest. I don't want to be so heavily weighted towards real estate, I guess.
Right.
If you're up for it. I also am kind of lazy and I don't want to have to deal with like tenants or anything like that. And I'm not handy either. So it's not like I could come over and fix a sink. So like, you know, I'm not really investing in real estate. I think if you're looking long-term, I think, you know, the biggest thing again is those demographic drivers, because you can't fight demographics. So in places like Surrey, which I think is going to obviously have a huge population boom, you know, it's going to be a lot of young people. So looking at where they're going to be buying, I think that's probably where I would look, or kind of, you know, land. I mean, just where can you get land or single detached homes in places where there's not a big supply of it? And that probably means Vancouver Island or the Okanagan, which are also going to have some real population drivers as retirement kicks up. And the Okanagan has kind of a both, where they've got retirees and a really young population over the next 5 years. So, you know, I would just look at demographics and where people are migrating to and where there's not a lot of supply. And wherever you find not a lot of supply and a lot of demographic drivers of demand, you're going to find rising prices.
Well, maybe we'll leave it there, but do you have a couple minutes here, Brendan, for the five wire?
You bet.
Okay, great. So question number one is, what is your favorite neighborhood in Vancouver?
My favorite. I wish I spent more time there. My sister lives in the West End, and I always find it great to visit there and just being able to walk around is fantastic. It's just such a nice, nice area kind of off Davies. And just, I like that neighborhood a lot, maybe because my sister lives there, but, that's one of my favorites. And then I just have to give a shout out to my own neighborhood, because it's very quiet and that's what I like.
All right, nice. Favorite bar or restaurant? It doesn't necessarily have to be in the city of Vancouver, greater Vancouver area.
My favorite restaurant in Vancouver is Nightingale. I think it's, I don't know if you've been there. It's, I think it's a Hawksworth restaurant, but it's just as someone who doesn't eat enough vegetables, they do vegetables so well that you can almost skip the proteins, which I would never do. I love protein, but their vegetables are incredible.
Yeah, no, that's a personal favorite as well. What is one book that you'd recommend to anyone listening?
Wow, that's a great question. One book. Man, I'm probably expected to say something to do with economics. So I'm going to give you two. My economics one is Jordi Galli, Monetary Policy, Inflation, and the Business Cycle. Now that's a page turner for your listeners. Tons of equations, but it's probably the best textbook I find on New Keynesian economics and macro modeling. The second one, though, I would probably go with, maybe Christopher Hitchens' Letters to a Young Contrarian. I think it's great. I think it's a great book to read when you're young. I think I'm staring at a lot of books in my office.
Right.
And so I'm overwhelmed, but I think those are solid choices. Yeah.
I don't say this about a lot of authors, but man, I really miss Christopher Hitchens.
I love
that guy.
One of my favorites, and yeah, I certainly would love to read some of his writings on the past 8 years.
No so, kidding, eh?
I can't even imagine the insults he could have written in the last 4 years, especially would have been great, but.
One piece of advice you would give your 18-year-old self?
Relax, I think. It's a very uptight 18-year-old. I think. Just, you know, relax. Things are going to be okay.
And last question is, what is something that you've bought in the last year or two for under $1,000 that's had an impact on your life?
Oh boy, we just bought an air fryer. This might be recency bias because I got it last week, but that thing's fantastic.
I feel like we've had that before, haven't we?
Yeah.
Oh really? Yeah.
It's a good one.
Great. It's, I mean, it obviously it, even though it's supposed to be a healthy alternative to fried food, and who doesn't love fried food, it still pushes you towards some pretty unhealthy choices. So you can cook vegetables in it, which I've done, and it's great.
I've had chicken fingers for the last 6 months.
That's right.
No, it's a great one for sure. Awesome. So, Brendan, how can people find out more about what BCREA is up to, and more about your writing and your projections and all of that?
Yeah, it's all in one place. If you go to bcrea.bc.ca, if you go to our economics page, we've got a ton of things to read. You can sign up to have our stuff delivered to your inbox. We do every time there's an economic indicator come out, my colleague Roy writes an incredibly thorough email and sends it out to our subscribers, and that's really useful. And we've got our forecast and our nowcast and a reopening dashboard, and we write market intelligence about things like how COVID's going to impact the housing market. So I would suggest going there and signing up, and we'll try and get you some useful stuff into your inbox.
Right on. Well, thanks so much for your time, Brendan. That was great, and hopefully we can have you back.
Awesome. I'd love to come back. That was really fun.
So there you have it, folks, our discussion with Brendan Augmanson, Chief Economist at the BCREA.
Matt, I love this conversation with Brendan. And you know what? You and I have been talking about, like, we both love real estate investing, and surprise, we love real estate. But I mean, when you look at the rates right now, and when you look at the opportunities, not only in the Lower Mainland, but right across BC, and then you have a conversation with someone like Brendan, and you know, we've been talking to a lot of people in the market right now. Yeah, Brendan does a great job of kind of crystallizing how I think a lot of people are feeling right now. There's some serious opportunities, I think, in the province right now, and super exciting. It's an exciting time to build equity, and with rates like this, how do you ignore the rates?
Well, yeah, two things, right? It's what 70 to 75 cents of every dollar is building equity
right now,
which is just incredible. So you're building equity so quickly. There's markets, say, like downtown, where you're catching what appears to be an upward trend with the vacancy rate going down again, the vaccine coming, a lot of exciting things. But more to just from an academic kind of standpoint here, like, we've been doing this podcast since before the foreign buyers tax. But I remember the foreign buyers tax. Oh my God, what's going to happen? I remember the empty homes tax. Oh my God, what's going to happen? The stress test. Oh my God, what's going to happen? And this was really this crystallized for me looking back, since we've really, at least on the show, been looking at what really, how resilient Vancouver is and what really impacts this market. And I think it's a very compelling case to make that it's really, interest rates are the only thing that can put this market on its
heels,
its knees a little wobbly. So with those not going up anytime soon, it looks like we're going to see a busy 2021.
Yeah, Matt. And if you want to have, like, if you just really want to see how impactful the rates are, like, just sit down and play with a mortgage calculator. Type in, you know, $500,000 and look how much you actually pay down over the course of 5 years in principal, right? Like, it's just incredible right now. Like, there's a real opportunity as long as you can keep it rented, or as long as, or your home. And another thing that you should do right now is consider refinancing if you haven't already done so.
Yeah. Okay.
So many people, so many clients of ours, we've reached out to a lot of our clients just, you know, checking in and seeing if there's an opportunity to refinance. And even with your penalty, if you have a penalty, even if you have a really high penalty, there's still an opportunity here to potentially save a ton of money. Some people are saving an astronomical amount of money right now by refinancing. So look into that as well. Check out what your current rate is. Check out what the bank will give you. So if you want to stay with the same bank, and if the penalty is too high, consider a blend and extend option. There's lots of options for you, but get in touch with your mortgage broker or get in touch with your bank, because this is just, I mean, it is.
We're in unprecedented times.
These are historical rates, people. They're historical rates.
That is for sure. Last but not least, before we go, Adam, Zolo.
Yeah.
There's a little site, some of you may know, Zolo.ca.
Right.
We just found out they wrote a fairly long article about all sorts of real estate podcasts.
Yeah, top 27 podcasts in Canada.
No, not. It was
across the board.
Top 27 podcasts. They had different categories. But no, but they did have a section, top 7 podcasts in Canada. And Feather and RCAP, we were number one.
You know what? It's an honor. And I think that was actually a pretty good list.
It's an honor and a privilege.
We've been number one on a few lists, a few podcast lists, but this one actually, it feels quite special. It's a local brokerage. It's a local site, and they're saying that we're the best in Canada. So we really appreciate it. Thank you for all the support of the VREP community. And we're looking forward to an incredible 2021.
We
have some of the best guests coming. I think this is going to be the best year yet.
Absolutely. Looking forward to 2021. If you're out there and you're excited about 2021, you're interested in selling, buying, anything to do Vancouver real estate, VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com is your ultimate resource. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Sign up to the LiveWire. That's our weekly mailer. We just sent out the stats. We send out stats before anyone else.
Yeah, we do.
And we get the stats where we got sales ratios on each sub-market. Very, very useful for monitoring specific markets. We have the deal of the month. We have all things real estate with the LiveWire. We also have private client services.
Yeah, Matt, if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor-level information at your fingertips. It's free. It's the best way to search for real estate. We know we've used all the resources out there, and this is the one we've settled on because really, PCS is just the best.
It is. It's the best. So if you're thinking about buying or selling, PCS is a great resource. You know what else is? The Sellers Club. We got the new volume coming out, so your house hasn't sold. For that or anything else, real estate related or not, give me a call, 778-847-2854 or matt@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
Yeah, Matt, and before I give my contact here, I'm just going to say, you know, even if you're not looking to invest in the Vancouver market or in the greater Vancouver area, but you are looking to invest in real estate right now, feel free to reach out because we've been looking at a lot of opportunities right across the province and there are some great cash flow opportunities. So feel free to get in touch. We have great people all over the province that we can put you in touch with.
There's a real benefit to being the number one podcast in Canada.
You meet a lot of people.
You meet a lot of smart, good people.
778-866-4574 or adam@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
And we also got that secret line, info@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
Have a great week, guys. Have a great start to your new year, and 2021 is going to be the best one yet.
Absolutely.
2,000 Faces for Radio. Subscribe today.